Hello, this is Richard Davis, welcoming you to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not-so-old. Well, our programme this time has something of a medical theme to it. We'll be hearing about an event that's taking place in the Jubilee Library, designed to introduce people to all the many services that are available to help them in the Brighton and Hove area. We'll also be hearing from a group of disabled people who are working to improve access to the beach, and from a local charity who, as part of the Brighton Festival Fringe, will be giving away copies of a graphic novel showing what it's like to suffer from one of a number of hidden health problems, such as anxiety, chronic fatigue syndrome. But before we get onto any of that, we'll be hearing about a project that the Sussex Wildlife Trust are running in Brighton, and about their work in the county in general. As usual, we'll be giving out various telephone numbers, email addresses and website addresses during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So let's get started with the Sussex Wildlife Trust. For some time now, they've had a little nature reserve which is hidden in northern Brighton. The entrance of it is in a road called the Deanway, which is one of the roads that comes off the A23 and goes under the railway. When the estate into which that road leads was built, there was a narrow strip of land left alongside the railway, running all the way from the low bridge at the Deanway up to the point where the train goes into the Mill Hill Tunnel. And that area of land has for some time been a hidden nature reserve. Well, now the Sussex Wildlife Trust are hoping to make it more open to the public. To find out more about this project, and indeed about the work of the Wildlife Trust in general, I took one of our roving microphones up to Stanmer Park a few days ago. And this is what I recorded. Well, I think this is one of the sunniest days of the year so far. It's certainly very warm. And I'm sitting here in a clearing in the middle of a woodland. Just behind me there's a pond which is full of reeds and so on. And alongside me is Hugh Morgan from the Sussex Wildlife Trust, with whom I've come up here to have a look at what the Trust are doing. I should say we're in Stanmer Park.
We are, yeah, we're in the Stanmer Organics bit of Stanmer Park. And this is one little site that the Trust use for delivering all manner of activities to all different age groups, really, right the way from the little nature tots of sort of 3 to 5 years old right through to adults. It's a beautiful spot that we've got here, and one of only three sites that we've got in the Brighton area. We don't own this reserve. We lease it from Stanmer Organics and sort of ultimately the council to use. And we've got two other reserves in Brighton that we do own, one of which is just behind Withdean Stadium, Withdean, part of Withdean Woods. Blink and you'd miss it, really. It's part of a wider woodland that's managed by the council. And the other one is the Deanway, which is a site in West Dean in Brighton that runs alongside the London to Brighton main railway. And we've recently received a funding grant from Scottish Power to develop the site for community and educational use. So that started this April, and we've already had a few events down there. I've run Youth Rangers, which is for 16 to 25 year olds, so that's a weekly practical conservation group. A colleague of mine who deals with a lot of the educational stuff has had a sort of teacher training, a teacher introduction session down there. She invited a lot of the local schools who can hopefully get there either by foot or by bicycle to use the site as an educational resource for outdoor learning. And I'm down there again tomorrow with the Youth Rangers, and we've also had a community event in there looking at the birds that call the site home at the start of spring. So that was very much aimed at those who live near the reserve in West Dean, because the site isn't open. It's a closed site, so a lot of people who live in the area have sort of walked past the entrance but never actually had a chance to go in there. So it was great to be able to offer the local community the chance to explore the reserve and see what's going on there, to develop a resource that we actually have within the city.
Yes, I'm one of the people that you mentioned there, that I live near the reserve in the Deanway, and I walked past the gate and peered into it. But I actually first met you a few weeks ago when they threw the gates open and allowed various people to come in and have a look round, under guidance, of course. And I was quite surprised at the extent of the reserve there. It runs all the way from the Deanway right up to the top of the hill.
It does, yeah. It extends for about three-quarters of a mile. It's narrow in some places and it extends a little bit. And, runs from the Deanway all the way up to the long tunnel that goes under Patcham Place, so the first big tunnel that you reach when you're leaving Brighton on the way up to London. So it acts as a wonderful wildlife corridor, really. There's only a small road separating the very end of the site to Patcham Place and then ultimately sort of Waterhall and the open downland. So it's a good way for wildlife to move around fairly undisturbed. As I say, there's no public access to the site. And there's a fantastic and large and very well-established badger set at the far end that we've filmed using night cameras a couple of years ago, and that's something, again, we'll do as part of the next year's activities.
Are you intending to open it to the public on other occasions?
Absolutely. There'll be a selection of community-aimed events over the next 12 months and beyond, introducing people just to the site so they can have an explore. I've got a local scout group are already booked in to have a look at it, and we'll be running some activities there, perhaps some we'll be doing some planting and some practical conservation work. We'll start a bat walk from there, and look at perhaps doing some basic bushcraft type activities. And my colleague Katie is going to be using it with a number of the schools that she works with. She takes care of a lot of the educational stuff that we do, so there will be a lot of school visits to the site. We're currently putting in a bit of infrastructure. We're going to get a compost loo on site and that kind of thing, so that it can be more readily used, particularly with younger groups. So that's something that will be exciting over the next 12 months.
But presumably you won't be able to do much in the way of disabled access.
It's a little bit limited, to be fair, yeah. The first third of the site is reasonably accessible, but yeah, to be honest, a lot of it does get a little rooty and sort of it's quite hilly, so it's not ideal for that, fortunately.
No, it is basically a fairly narrow path through the wood, isn't
it? Yeah, it is.
And
it is.
Like all these sort of paths, it's very uneven.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
So it's fine for walking, but obviously wheelchairs would be out of the question.
It would be. We're going to be putting in a pond. It's the one thing that we don't have on site at the moment, so that will be going in towards the tail end of this year. So that should be fantastic to see that develop, and that will be at the front of the site, so accessibility to that will be easier.
And how can people find out when the site's likely to be open?
If they look on our website, Sussex Wildlife Trust website, on the What's On page, activities will be advertised on that. And also locally there'll be posters and that sort of thing up and on our social media as well. Initially, I think it'll be nice to focus upon those who live reasonably close to the site, because as I say, it is normally locked, so I want the local community to be aware of it and what we're doing there.
The Sussex Wildlife Trust is actually based in Woods Mill, isn't it?
That's right, yeah, we've got that's our headquarters up near Henfield.
And I was looking at your website the other day and I noticed it, looking through all the activities that are going on, and there's an enormous amount going on all over the county.
That's right, yeah. Obviously, we're a county-wide charity, part of a national network of wildlife trusts, and every single day there is something going on somewhere. There's something, if you're interested in getting involved in conservation or nature and learning more, then there's something there for you.
Well, as I say, we're actually in Stanmer Park today, in quite a large clearing in the woods up here,
Plenty of birds, a little robin.
Yes,
see what we're up to.
I'm hoping that people will be able to hear the birds singing in the background, because I can certainly hear them. That's the only background noise we get. It's very nice and quiet up here.
It is. It's lovely and peaceful.
This, again, is a site that you rent.
Yeah, ultimately, Sussex Wildlife Trust don't own this site. It's one that we're part of Stammer Organics, and ultimately it's council land. But we use it for a wide variety of activities. And one of the things that we do up here, as do other people within Stammer Organics, actually, is I work quite closely and have done over the years with sort of adults with mental health issues. So it's a beautiful, tranquil site for people to sort of step away from the hurly-burly of the city in particular, and come up here and relax and get involved in some gardening or conservation activities, and just sit and enjoy, you know, the surroundings that we're enjoying today. And so, yeah, all groups from sort of 3-year-olds upwards will use the site for conservation work and practical things.
So a large part of the work of the Trust is education.
Yeah, it is. Dotted across the county, we've got our reserves that we manage to increase their, to preserve them, and to increase the biodiversity and habitats that we have on there. So we've got that side of things. So there's the practical land management side, together with the educational side, awareness side, the well-being side. So the Trust look at, you know, all manner of aspects of conservation and the environment, and how we can protect it. And, you know, one of the main ways of getting people to think about how they can improve and protect what we've got here in Sussex is through education and through awareness raising, and from actually getting people out into the outside world.
And are there occasions when people can just come along and wander and enjoy the landscape and not being involved with a particular project?
No, absolutely not. All of the reserves are open to the public, bar the Deanway, for various reasons. But our reserves are open, and open for people to go and explore. So, no, you don't have to be involved with a specific group to be able to go out and enjoy the wonderful countryside that we have around us here in Sussex.
And once again, the details will be on the website.
Yeah, all the details of any specific activities are there on site, together with maps of our reserve, so people can look on the web and figure out where they would like to go and visit. So as I say, in Brighton we have just some small urban reserves, and we do own a small section up at Ditchling Beacon, so that's always worth a visit. I mean, we've got our site there, which is very good for orchids, which will soon be appearing. But, you know, once you're up at Ditchling Beacon, you're there on top of the downs, and there's wonderful walks and views to be started off from there. Most of our reserves tend to be further out into the Weald. We've got a Rye Harbour as well, out towards the east. So they're dotted across the county. But that's one of the reasons why the development of the Deanway is so exciting, in that we actually have a reserve within Brighton and Hove that we can look at using to and maximising what we can get out of that site.
Is this site at Stanmer Park open to the public?
No, this one isn't. The Stanmer Organics generally is open.
Who are Stanmer Organics, are they?
They're a collection of, I think there's really about 14 different groups that use this area here for a variety of projects. So there'll be organic fruit and vegetable growing, there's a stonemason, there's wood carvers, there's us doing conservation, there's other groups doing sort of ecotherapy. So there's a variety of activities going on this site. There's an open day actually for Stanmer Organics coming up on June the 8th, I believe, from 11 o'clock. So if anybody does want to come up and have a look at the work going on up here, they'll be very welcome to do so. It's an event, from 11 o'clock on Saturday, June the 8th.
I might well do that, you never know.
Fantastic.
Okay, Hugh, thanks very much.
Absolute pleasure.
I was talking to Hugh Morgan of the Sussex Wildlife Trust. And if you'd like to find out more about the Trust, you can go to their website, which is at Sussex Wildlife Trust, which is typed all as one word, .org.uk. That's sussexwildlifetrust.org.uk. Well, towards the end of that interview, Hugh Morgan mentioned an open day that Stanmer Organics are holding at Stanmer Park on Saturday, June the 8th. And now we're going to hear about another event which happens on the following Saturday, June the 15th. It's organised by the Trust for Developing Communities, and it's designed to inform older people about all the services that are available for them in the Brighton area. To tell us more about it, Kirsty Walker came into the studio to speak to Chris, and Chris began by asking her to tell him what her job is.
I work for the Trust for Developing Communities, and we do community development across the city.
You've got an event coming up in the open market, so tell us a bit about it.
We're working with some of the local GPs to try and increase patient and public engagement into some of their services, but also to link in with some of the voluntary sector services so that people can have a better idea about what is out there and available to them to help them be well and happy.
Is it a case that people don't know what's available?
Definitely. There's some amazing voluntary sector services, several of whom will be showcasing at the event and having lots of information on their services and how you can access them. But also, often GPs don't know all the services out there because they change so often, or in the voluntary sector there's often not much budget for advertising and promoting your services. So unfortunately they tend to be known by people that are already using them, but if you're not already using them it's often hard to find out.
So it's a communications exercise. Will it be fun as well?
Hopefully, yes. We've got the Healthy Lifestyles team there, hoping to get people playing table tennis, trying out different things, doing some tasters of stuff. And so, yes, we're hoping it won't just be lots and lots of leaflets.
What will be there?
Well, there'll be all sorts of different services, from our BME engagement team to talk around how people from different ethnic minorities might experience engaging with services, but also specialist services like Oasis and Cascade Creative Recovery. And then we'll also have some stuff for young people. We're hopefully having our youth team with school nurses there to talk about the sexual health with young people, but also for older people, things that they can engage with and information about how to age well and access services of their needs.
Do you think it's increasingly important that the problems that the NHS is suffering from is dealt with by the voluntary sector, or is it just a question of more funding?
I think there's a mixture. I think definitely some services within the NHS would say they need more funding for their particular service. But also, I think if people make good choices in terms of trying to stay well, age well, live well, then I think that can reduce the need for some of those services. And I think some of that is about people knowing what those choices are out there and how they can be helped to do that.
And the event, it's in the open market, which is London Road. When and what time?
It's Saturday, the 25th of May. It'll be 10 till 2 at the open market, so people can just pop in at any time and we'll be able to sort of show them around and introduce them to some of the different services there.
And can people get more information anywhere?
Yes, if they'd like to get more information, we're on Facebook as an event, but also they can look on the Trust for Developing Communities website, www.trustdevcom.org.uk, or they can contact me at the Trust for Developing Communities.
And telephone number?
07939831160.
And just finally, why should people come?
Basically, just to find out different services that can help them make some positive choices about their own health.
And do you think it's going to change things?
We're hoping that out of this event, people that are particularly interested will form a health action group to help influence what services do get funded and what services are shaped like to meet the needs of people for that area going forward.
Kirsty, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, I suppose most of us, who are reasonably fit and well, would expect not to have to see the doctor except very occasionally. But of course there are people around who suffer from permanent disabilities, and for them, visiting the doctor is probably a much more frequent experience. It's easy enough for those of us who are fit and well to take that for granted, and not to realise the difficulties that some disabled people have in, for example, getting down onto Brighton Beach. Well, recently, some local disabled people have set up a group to work to improve access to the beach, and it's called, not surprisingly, the Brighton Beach Access Group. To find out more about them, Maya Davis went to talk to Hannah Loach and Claire Nelson. And because Hannah is physically disabled and finds it difficult to get out of her flat, Maya went over to speak to them there. She began by asking them to introduce themselves.
I'm Hannah and I'm a member of the Brighton Beach Access Team.
My name's Claire and I'm the lead for the Brighton Beach Access Team.
Would one of you like to tell me what the Brighton Beach Access Team is then?
We are a group of individuals, all with an identified disability or impairment, or full-time carer, who are working together to campaign and work with the council to make Brighton and Hove beaches fully accessible. At the moment they're not, and that's what we're working towards at the moment, yeah.
When you say they're not fully accessible, people do say there are ramps down to the beach. Is that not enough?
There are some dropped curbs that means you can access the beach, but once you're on the shingle, you can't go any further. There are two adapted beach buggy wheelchair things, which up until now the council have thought were adequate, but after doing some research, they aren't appropriate. So at the moment, there isn't actually any access to the beach for people who have mobility problems. But also, it's not accessible for many other issues, such as if you have a visual impairment or if you struggle with too much stimulus, if you're on the autism spectrum. There's lots of things that haven't been addressed, including toileting, signage and appropriate information online. There's a whole range of things that we're looking at to improve.
Hannah, how did you get involved?
This was actually something I'd been working on myself since I moved to Brighton. I was struck by the inaccessibility of the beach and I had been trying alone to change things. Actually, what became evident is that whilst everybody supported it, it's impossible for one person to make a change.
About a year ago, the very small group that was led by Claire at that point had an open meeting which was advertised on Facebook. My carer saw it actually and suggested that I went along. We will be repeating a meeting like that. The aim of that meeting, and indeed the next one coming up, was to draw attention, draw publicity to this, and to engage as many people in the process as possible. As part of this whole process, we got a petition together that we took to the council before Christmas. It was immediately evident as you spoke to people how few people understood that actually the beach is not accessible. If you ask people, do you think disabled people should be able to access the beach? The answer is always, of course, a resounding yes. And everybody is totally in favour, but actually there are many practical difficulties that make it impossible, as Claire has already mentioned. There are these beach wheelchairs which were purchased many years ago, actually, but because of the nature of the beach here, because of the gradient, the shifting shingle, and the design of the chairs, they just don't really function effectively. I've been in it myself. It took four men to push me back up, which is degrading. It is limiting. It also means that I cannot spontaneously go down to the beach with a group of friends and use the beach as anybody else would. I have to book, I have to recruit a group, I have to beg for help. The aim of this campaign is to make it so that people with all sorts of disabilities can use the beach just like anybody else.
Have you actually managed to get into the sea?
I've been into the sea twice in the 2 years that I've been here, and that was actually, again, through the kindness of volunteers, which was through the volunteers at the Access Beach for the Paddle Round the Pier event. They've very kindly taken me in, which is, again, taken a lot of organisation, a lot of people. It is fantastic that they've done that, and I've really valued those days. But actually, once a year is not a lot when we have this amazing facility there.
Also, at the open meeting that we held at the Brighthelm Centre last May, we were asking questions of people, what were the limits getting them onto the beach, what difference will it make to their life, and what changes would they like to see. And I was really quite astonished by the amount of wheelchair users who had never actually been onto the shingle. They would have to sit on the promenade whilst watching their children splash around in the sea. So there was a huge number of people who have lived in Brighton, some for all their lives, some for just a few years, who've never even been able to sit on the beach. One girl in particular, who's a full-time wheelchair user, said that although she's born and bred in Brighton, she's never actually been on the beach.
I think the problem with so many of these things is not lack of willingness, it's just a lack of awareness. You don't see the difficulties of people with disabilities on the beaches because we're not on the beaches. Mm. And, of course, the sea and exercise and just being near, being in contact with the natural world, has so many proven benefits of all different kinds. On a sort of very personal level, I am a full-time wheelchair user, but I'm actually a strong swimmer. When I'm in the sea, my disabilities are less apparent. I can stand, I can walk when I'm in the sea. And the irony of being able to walk, if only I could get into the sea that would facilitate that, it is striking.
So how did you start your campaign?
I'm part of Scope's Local Peoples Programme, which is a community-led project funded by Scope, which used to be the Spastic Society, enabling people with disabilities and impairments to spot inequalities in the community. So it was born out of that. It was born out of getting together with other people and realising that this was a massive inequality that was happening. And because I felt very strongly about it, I put myself forward as the lead. From there, we've done a little bit of our own research into what was available, what's been offered previously. And there has been attempts to make the beach accessible, but they've never succeeded. So we held an open public meeting at the Brighton Centre last May, which is where Hannah got involved, and quite a few people came along to give their opinions. And from there, we grew and we formed a very small, strong team working on this, and we produced a white paper in conjunction with the New Economics Foundation, looking at all the issues regarding the beach, and like I say, what's been done before, what the possible outcomes could be. There was numerous research that was added to that, alongside with a petition that we started, where we got 1,901 signatures, which we presented at the council in December. At that point, we got total support, cross-party support. It was wonderful, really. It felt a very genuine, warm support as well. All the councillors seemed as astonished as we were as a group that this hadn't happened already in this day and age. And from there forward, we have been working with the council, and we've been having meetings regarding how to move this forward. And we've got full backing from the council. We're working very closely. We've been told that this is something that is going to be addressed seriously, and we need to move forward with it together.
I think possibly it's an area of diversity that has slipped people's minds a little bit.
I think so. I think, as I said, the trouble is that actually the lack of accessibility means that it's not visible. You don't see people struggling because they're not there struggling. I think perhaps it also reflects the changing nature of disability and how much more broadly we consider it. We, as Claire has mentioned, we have got input from people with all sorts of disabilities, and we don't just want to make it accessible for wheelchair users or those who may be unsteady on their feet or even buggy users. We actually want to address all kinds of issues that may be making life harder for those with disabilities. It's not been lack of support in the past. I think, I, as Claire mentioned, attempts have been made over the years, but I think they have always been rather piecemeal, and actually there hasn't perhaps been the user involvement.
So what stage have you got to now?
Well, as Claire said, we've been working quite closely with a couple of council committees, and we've had some good progress so far. We have got funding agreed for some additional beach wheelchairs, which we hope will be in place by this summer. We also are going to be putting an additional viewing platform, which will enable people with disabilities to get onto the shingle so that they can get closer to the sea. Ultimately, of course, our goal is to get a permanent structure that will actually enable full access to the sea. This is likely to be something like a boardwalk or a set of matting, but I think we're hoping for something a bit more concrete and lasting that will provide long-term full access for people of all sorts of disabilities. We're also going to be working on signage and lighting, and those are both going to be addressed this summer, I think, to make it, all the information clearer to people. And we are also working on raising awareness among beach workers, the lifeguards, various other volunteers, so that tourists and those who may not be familiar with the facilities already available can be told about them.
And how are you going to let people know about this? Or indeed, how are you going to involve other people?
We have an event coming up this summer. Unfortunately, we don't have a date for that at the moment. This is going to be held at the Brighton Centre, and it's a kind of drop-in event where we'll be inviting people to come along and give their ideas and suggestions and talk about their experiences. We're now at the point where we're looking at design ideas for actually the structure that will enable people to get into the sea. We've been looking at viewing platforms, so we're going to be asking people to give ideas for appropriate shapes for the viewing platforms, but really we're asking people to actually start thinking about what this structure may look like. Also at this event, we're hoping to have quite a few beach wheelchairs for people to trial out to see which ones are most appropriate. And it's just a chance to raise awareness and to get more people involved and to move on to the next stage.
But you don't know when this event's going to be yet.
Hopefully we'll be finding out the date in the next week or so. We're looking at either the last 2 weeks of July or the first 2 weeks of August.
We'll also be having a stall at this year's Disability Pride Festival, which is happening on Hove Lawns on Sunday, July 14th. So come along and see us.
One thing that I'd like to say is, although we are ourselves a group of people with disabilities, you don't actually have to have a disability or be associated with somebody with a disability in order to get involved. We are actually looking for as much help and as many ideas and as much support as possible. If you feel like by working with us you may have something to offer, that would be fabulous and hugely welcomed. Claire mentioned having visionary ideas. We really would love those, but it may be that you don't have them yet. But please do stay in touch. Do come along to the open event. Keep in touch and see what we're doing, and actually things may occur to you.
How can people contact you?
At the moment, we've got a Facebook group, which is called Beach Access Brighton and Hove. We're in the process of becoming a constituted group, which would be Brighton Beach Access Team, and there will be a website and a Facebook page, but at the moment it's Beach Access Brighton and Hove on Facebook. In the meantime, if people have got any thoughts or ideas or even any designs, they can either contact you or get in touch with the team through Beach Access Brighton and Hove on Facebook.
Well, that sounds a really good project, and I think we'll probably revisit it from time to time to see how you're both getting on. Hannah and Claire, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Mayor.
Maya Davis was talking to Hannah Loach and Claire Nelson of the Brighton Beach Access Team. If you'd like to contact the team, you can go to their Facebook page, which is Beach Access Brighton and Hove. The group's only been going a short while, so they haven't been able to set up a website as yet, but they're hoping to do so shortly. And in the next few weeks, we'll be giving you more details about the event that they're planning for late July and early August. If you want to contact the group by email, you can do so via us, that is Grey Matters Productions, the organisation that makes this programme for Radio Refurb. Our email address is info, that's I-N-F-O, at greymattersproductions, typed all as one word, .org.uk. That's info at greymattersproductions.org.uk. If you send an email to that address, marking it for the attention of the Brighton Beach Access Team, we'll pass it on to them. We've just been talking about people with physical disabilities, and with somebody like Hannah, who's in a wheelchair, it's pretty obvious to the general public that she is disabled and needs special help. But of course, there's a whole group of people who look perfectly normal, but have hidden mental conditions, such as anxiety, autism, or chronic fatigue syndrome. And for them, life can be even harder. These conditions affect many millions of people worldwide, but they often face being isolated, misunderstood, or stigmatised by society, and they're discouraged from opening up, even seeking the support they need, for fear of being judged. Well, as part of the Brighton Festival Fringe this year, a local charity will be giving away a new book, The Loneliness and Stigma of Living with an Invisible Health Condition. The charity is called Root Experience, and it's just published a book about what it's like to live with an invisible condition. It's donating these books to local communities in Sussex and beyond. To tell us more about it, I invited Simon Magnus to come into the studio, and I began by asking him how he got involved in the project.
Well, it came from actually looking at my dad, who lives with MS. And MS can look a lot like you're drunk, and the way that it presents itself can be not something that people are very used to seeing. And people would look at him on the street, or the support that he needed from going into shops and things, he wouldn't be given the support that he actually needs. So the project started from me having a curiosity about that and wanting to know whether people living with other invisible conditions were experiencing similar things in relation to sort of stigma or how they were seen in the world.
So the project was actually your idea in the first place, was it?
Yes, it was. Yes, like 4 years ago it's taken to get to this point.
It looks quite exciting. I've had a look at the book. It's basically a graphic novel, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's a graphic novel about what it's like to live with various invisible conditions that was written in workshops that we ran across the southeast with groups of people that were, this was their everyday experience, and we got their ideas, we got their pictures, we got their stories down, and then we took it and turned it into a graphic novel, which we then took back to them, and they went, oh, we like this, oh, we're not too sure about that, oh, really, what are you trying to say here? And then, yeah, it's got to the point now where we have a book, which is incredible.
These are conditions that many millions of people worldwide suffer from, but they tend to be hidden, don't they?
Yes, it's, I think, a relatively new term, kind of hidden condition. So it can be anything from mental health issues to autism, other neurodivergent things, dyslexia, or things like chronic pain, ME, Parkinson's sometimes. Anything that you can't see and that people are having to struggle through every day and having to constantly explain themselves over and over again of, like, what do we want? What do we need? How do we get the support that we actually need to get? And I think that we're at a point where it's a bit tiring to have to constantly be asking those questions.
Yes, indeed. A lot of the conditions involved that the people suffer from are things that weren't really recognised until very recently, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point, is that they're only now starting to be seen as, how do we as a society understand that this is very, very common?
Yes, I always wonder, things like this, it's how the sufferers have been treated in the past. You can't really retell, can you?
No, and like you say, we don't know how much of this was around before because it wasn't diagnosed and didn't have its place. We don't, how people have actually managed to do with these things is incredible, actually.
I know, ME, when it was first recognise, a lot of people were very cynical about it, weren't they? They to refer to it as yuppie flu, I think, regarded just being an excuse for being lazy.
Yeah, well, that's what people hear all the time. ME is a particularly, it's one that I've noticed again and again that people come back with, of people just not believing them and just go, oh, you're just a little bit tired. And if you've ever seen anyone that's in a full ME, like, attack, or I don't know what the technical term is for it, but it is not just a little bit tired. I mean, it is a need of, I've met someone who has to lie down on the street, in the middle of the street, because it just comes on and there is nothing that she can do. Now, the reaction that she will get, actually, again, is a drunk reaction, is that people will avoid her rather than stepping in with what does she need. Mm. And she doesn't really have any choice over the matter. And often what happens with ME is that people will push themselves because they feel like they need to be seen to be doing enough, and they push beyond what they're able to do. And it's a massive learning thing with ME of trying to work out what can I do and what am I able to do.
And what are you hoping that the publication of this book will achieve?
I think, in my wildest dreams, the book is for people who have a condition to give to someone that doesn't, so that they can have a deeper understanding without the person with a condition having to keep explaining themselves. For people that don't have conditions to pick up a book and have a deeper understanding of what it's like for people when things look fine. When we just look at someone from the outside and think, oh, that person is fine or normal is the word that comes across. And the book is basically about being normal and whether normal exists at all. And then for people that have conditions, it's about trying to give people more confidence to open up and feel they can connect to other people. Because there's a lot of shame as well. There's a lot of shame of not being able to live a, let's say, normal life. And that people hide that shame and hide what they actually need because of it.
So it's aimed more at people who don't suffer from these conditions, and it aims to inform them rather than to help the sufferers to cope, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both. I think that we are not there to put down some pill that's able to help people to actually cope in, because it's such a wide variety of conditions. But I do think that it really helps anyone to live with their condition if they're more open about it. And when we feel so restricted in the way that we approach ourselves and our vulnerability to the world, it can create so many more conditions. I have never, in this process of making of the book, met someone with a physical condition who doesn't have a mental health issue on top of that. And that often, when I talk to people, came from the fact that they had to keep hiding, they had to keep it inside, and that creates mental health problems.
Who are Root Experience?
Root Experience are an arts charity who use workshops in order to find out stories from people who are generally underrepresented in society. And we take those stories, and with the participants, we turn them into some form of interactive art that then gets put up for other people to understand. So that could be an interactive exhibition, it could be a piece of theatre, it could be a book, but we generally let the content of what comes out of those workshops inform the artistic medium rather than the other way around.
Now, you're having an event in a few days' time when you're actually going to be giving away copies of the book, I gather.
Yeah, we are. So at Jubilee Library on Saturday, the 25th, we are going to be giving away about 1,000 copies of the book as part of kind of a library takeover that's part of Brighton Fringe. And the library takeover will be, there'll be lots of different elements in there. There'll be some games, there'll be conversation tables. There's a photography exhibition that we've done. So you can come in, have a look at what's there, and then walk away with a free copy or two free copies. And we've had that quite a bit of someone coming up, picking up a free copy, giving it a quick flick through, and then coming back going, excuse me, can I just take one of these to my mum, please?
And people can just drop into the library. They don't need to make an appointment or anything.
No. We are there from 10 o'clock till 3 o'clock. And they can just come. We're there all day. They can spend 10 minutes there. They can spend 2 hours with us. It makes no difference to us. We'd just love to see people down there.
So that's between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. on Saturday the 25th?
Yes, it is. And it should be a really fun day. We've been doing it in libraries across the southeast. And so this is kind of in the middle of our tour, and it's just people really engage with it, and people really want to sit down and chat and find it a place where they can actually talk about things that they're not able to talk about in the outside world. And we found such a positive community through that. And because people in Brighton helped to write the book itself, we'll also have people that helped to write it at the event.
And you've got a website as well, haven't you, from which I gather, well, I know you can, free copies of the book can be downloaded because I've downloaded one.
Yeah, we do. So alongside the book, we've put together a website with people's stories in it. So it's filled with videos, it's filled with audio stuff, it's filled with things to write, that is people's direct stories and experience of living with invisible conditions. And you can go into it and select, oh, I want to hear about loneliness, or I want to hear about challenges, or I want to hear about achievements. And so you can select by that. So we've really specifically not gone into conditions so that people start to look at a shared experience. And then on that website, there's also loads of support websites, other people that are actually able to offer support. You can, like you say, download the book from there, so you can have a read the book if you're not able to get a free copy. And the website is hiddenstories.co.uk.
Presumably many of the people who come to the event are sufferers or people who have to care for sufferers.
Yeah, I think that's what we found a lot, is that people that are living with the conditions or caring for people with the conditions are the ones that get very, very drawn to it. But the great thing also putting it in a library is that we don't have to get an audience in. So people are naturally coming in. So we're actually able to really connect to people that are not thinking about this in their own right.
So you're able to spread the knowledge to people who wouldn't have thought about it before.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's joy of coming on something like this, because then we can spread it to more people.
Let's hope so. Thanks very much, Simon. I hope the event goes well.
Thank you so much for having me.
I was talking to Simon Magnus of the Hidden Stories Project. And as you'll gather from that, the event at which they're giving away free books takes place at the Jubilee Library on Saturday, May the 25th, between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. Well, as a result of this programme, you've now got two things you can do at that time on a Saturday, because the presentation on medical services by the Trust for Developing Communities also takes place on May the 25th and starts at 10, but it finishes an hour earlier at 2 o'clock. That's at the open market. Of course, as the two venues are quite close together in the centre of Brighton, and you can drop into either of the events at any time, you don't have to be there at the start or the finish necessarily. You could probably manage to get to both of them if you wanted to. I'll leave that up to you. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time, and that'll be presented by Chris English. And I'll be back in a month's time with my next edition. Until we meet again, this is Richard Davis wishing you all the very best. Goodbye.